Ja, wunderschönen guten Morgen. Ich hoffe, dass Ihr Morgen mindestens halb so geil war wie mein Morgen. Ich bin nämlich aktuell auf Vaterschaftsurlaub von den USA eingeflogen, besuche gerade meine Familie in Münster und habe mir heute Morgen den Audi meiner Eltern geliehen und bin erstmal hier runtergebracht. Ich muss ja sagen, nach ungefähr 3,5 Jahren amerikanischer Autobahn fühlt man sich wieder richtig wohl auf der deutschen Autobahn. Was ich nicht bedacht habe, war Berufsverkehr. Ich habe mehr gestanden als gefahren. Leider, leider, leider. Alright, I will now switch to English. My name is Emil Landworth. With me today is Andrew Pardo. We are both Microsoft Program Managers working on the .NET Framework team. We both work in Redmond. And I work on the library side of things. So my team owns things like the base class library, you know, the primitive types, reflection, IO, that sort of thing. We also own part of the tooling in Visual Studio to create libraries, particularly portable class libraries. And Andrew, what do you own?
So my team owns the runtime, garbage collector, threading, exception handling, basically the entire execution engine of .NET across all platforms.
So all the fun part.
Yes.
So today we will talk a bit about what we did. So we didn't want to do just a feature talk where we basically just walk feature by, you know, by feature, because we think that's not a valuable use of your time. You only have 45 minutes. So instead, we want to basically condense like out of it, like what are the, you know, really important features we did. We would look at, you know, a few of them, and we will also specifically talk about continuous innovation. So when we talk about continuous innovation, we talk about how we want to shape .NET moving forward. So the key things there are simplified sharing. So you probably write code for multiple platforms, so you want to have an easier time doing that. And we also want to do faster innovation. Like after 10 years, the .NET framework is pretty big, so am I, and sometimes it's a bit better to get leaner and faster again. So if we talk about .NET, I want to highlight a bit what we think about .NET in general. Like, what is .NET? It's a very umbrella term that we use at Microsoft. So when we refer to .NET, we don't just mean the .NET framework. To us, the .NET is an umbrella brand that, you know, involves a bunch of things. It involves things like the runtime that Andrew owns. It involves things like the ecosystem, which is just a fancy way to say libraries. And then there is languages like C#, VB, and F#. And there's obviously tools as well, like Visual Studio. And all of these things together form what we think about .NET, because it's a holistic experience to write code.
There we go. The point there is that the beautiful little box at the end is what our marketing teams have given us for our new logo. So I hope you like it. It's very flat. It's very, there's a word that begins with M I'm not supposed to use, but I don't remember what it is. Anyway, good morning. So, first, a quick look at .NET 4.5. We had a lot of work that went into .NET 4.5, and it released a year ago. Most of the focus from what I saw was, of course, the WinRT work to make modern apps work, Windows Store apps work, but we also did a number of huge fundamental things, like a ton of GC work. NUMA awareness for over 64-bit processors was not a simple task. A lot of ecosystem work that Emo will be talking about is continuing on from 4.5. Now, .NET 4.5 is now installed on over 100 million machines, and here we are with .NET 4.5.1. Microsoft is moving, and DevDiv is moving into a phase of continuous innovation and continuous delivery. Christian mentioned this morning that we've had three updates published since the release of Visual Studio 2012. The fourth, I think it was October 7th, that the RC came out, so you should be seeing that pretty soon. But looking at .NET 4.5.1, in a nutshell, there's three things that we think the .NET team delivers. The first, the essence of .NET, is developer productivity. If you think about it, years ago, people wrote in very low-level languages. Lotus 1-2-3 was written in assembly, right? And then they moved to high-level languages like C so that they could be more productive. .NET does the same thing just, you know, 30 years later, because now Emo's around, it can't write assembly. Application performance. Application performance is .NET's biggest challenge. It's where we spend a lot of our time. So I've got a number of features to talk about from .NET 4.5.1 there. And then, as Emo mentioned earlier, we will be focusing quite a bit on continuous innovation. So, developer productivity. So what makes a developer productive? Well, ask them. So if you look here, we've got a bunch of feedback that we received from places like Stack Overflow or Connect, and then some comments on blogs. Something that we heard quite a bit was, why doesn't .NET continue work on 64-bit? Well, it does. ENC is now supported on 64-bit in almost every way that it is on 32-bit. Soon we will get ASP.NET worker roles, but otherwise the support is the same across platforms.
And it only took us 8 years to build it.
Only so. 8 years.
Hooray.
Yes. You can thank Emo for that feature, actually. if any of you, how many of you ever wrote VB6 code? The most successful programming language in the world. Yes. Awesome. so sorry for what we did to you 13 years ago. Anyway, one of the nice things about VB6 and C++ is being native languages, you were able to see the function return values in the autos window. We've now added that for managed code. I'll be talking about both of these features a bit more later in my diagnostics talk. And likewise, there's a bit about async debugging. We've had incredible async debugging improvements that we've brought into 4.5.1. This is more important than, at least from our point of view, more important than being a development feature. This is more of a feature about how Microsoft works. You know, it's been said that Microsoft ships their org chart, but the async debugging feature is one of these that required work from the languages teams, C++ and C#, as well as JavaScript, and the platform. So one of the things about async debugging is it only works on Windows 8.1, because we had to make fundamental changes to Windows in order to make this work. So in Microsoft's push for continuous innovation, we're also trying to work together as one big company and deliver things that are across platforms and developer tools. The other large category of developer productivity are things that we did to help with the platforms. So the first two there, the system exception message and system exception stack trace, come from the fact that WinRT exceptions, WinRT has a different model of types than .NET has. And so there are places where we actually project the type from WinRT onto .NET. And sometimes the exceptions, we were losing the type information that was inside of Windows, and they were coming back to .NET as hResults. So we've now done work with Windows to bring those together and actually bring the stack information to the .NET developer. And the second there, as random access stream, I just love this guy's comment. I give up. How do you convert a stream to a random access stream? So we've now added that, added an overload to make that possible. Also that you can do nullable T for structs. And then the last is something that has taken us almost 8 years to fix. It is that your ADO.NET connections automatically retry when your connection drops. So, application performance. In our continuous innovation, we're not only trying to address concerns that developers have had with our developer productivity items, we're trying to make some very deep fundamental changes. Most of the developer productivity work is scoped to some extent, and you see the 64-bit ENC work when you're doing edit and continue on a 64-bit machine. The application performance items, these are more broad-based, wide-impact work. So four of them that I want to call out from .NET 4.5.1. The ability to suspend ASP.NET apps, and I'll be showing you this a bit later. The IIS team did a lot of work in Windows 8.1 to make it possible to suspend an IIS session. Basically, they freeze it, write it to disk, and then when you go back to your site, it rehydrates it, and your code is running again, rather than restarting your page after idle timeout. Now, if you've got an ASP.NET app, then IIS is only one-third of the equation. You know, ASP.NET is the big two-thirds there. So we had to do quite a bit of work to make ASP.NET apps come back from being freeze-dried quickly after suspend. As it says, we're able to, because you're not actually hosting all the sites in memory, we've seen 7x site density improvements, and the load is just incredibly fast. I'll be showing that in a little bit. Also in ASP.NET, we have multi-core JIT enabled by default. We did work in .NET 4.5 to enable the JIT to be compiling methods that you would be calling later. We do a flow graph analysis and see what methods are going to be called. Then we compile those in the background when your app starts, instead of waiting for your function to be called to do the jitting. Some general performance work that we've done in .NET 4.5.1. Core.NET is shipped as native images on Windows. There was an experience in Windows where the first time you run the app is jitted. And then a little bit later, Windows comes by in a task and it engines. It creates native images for your app so that your subsequent launches are faster. And I'll be talking about that a little bit later as well. One of the problems with this experience is that anytime Emo decides to ship an update to .NET, to the frameworks, then we have to re-engine everything. And so everything gets back to the first launch JIT experience. So this year we did quite a bit of work with Windows Build Lab and Developer Division Build Lab to enable us to ship native images in servicing events in OEM patches. And then the last feature that was wide-ranging is large object heap compaction. The large object heap, as a refresher, is there are three main heaps in the garbage collector. Newly allocated items go on to generation zero, and then they get aged into generation one, and then generation two, which is where the long-lived items live. If you allocate large objects, because large objects are normally long-lived and don't move a lot, or if you allocate an array of doubles due to a quirk with alignment, then these live on something called the large object heap. There have been some reports of the large object heap getting fragmented and memory growing. If you have a consistent repro for this, we would love to have it. Our garbage collector developer, Mounty Stevens, and Patrick Desoud, our technical fellow, still don't believe that this happens in the wild. So if you get a repro, please send it to me, and I would love to prove them wrong. Nonetheless, we did the work in part to enable the ASP.NET suspension work. But these things, these four items here are the kinds of things that will come up in many sorts of applications. The fundamental work underlying these doesn't just benefit where you see it. So, for ASP.NET, I have a movie of the ASP.NET suspension because setting up a server here is not extremely easy. Let me get this back up, duplicate. This is a very nice feature in that all you need to do to enable this feature, there's really no work required from your side, is you go into the manager, the IIS manager for your ASP.NET website, you pick your application pool, and under advanced settings, you pick the idle to go from terminate to suspend. So you can charge your boss for a day of work. I think that's an hour work for any of you consultants. It's actually a very nice feature. And let me get the, here it is. Windows 8. If anyone wants to see The Conjuring, it's popular on Xbox video right now. So what we have today is, as I said, a video of .NET Nuke put up on four ASP.NET websites. The reason that I couldn't do a live demo of this today is because this is running on an actual server farm that is owned by the IIS team. So this is real hardware that is used for real test scenarios. There's four installs of the .NET Nuke website. Two of them are set to terminate, two of them are set to suspend after idle timeout. And so this just goes for a minute. One of the nice things about this feature, at least from my point of view, given that I actually need a job and I need to be producing code in order to keep getting paid, one of the nice things about this feature is just how much CLR work was required to make this happen. When IIS decides that it is time to page out a website and call suspend, it asks the CLR to stop all the application domains, suspend all of the threads, hold all of the timers on the threads so that when you restart the threads, you don't have a time span for when your site was asleep. If an operation took 5 seconds with a suspend of a minute in the middle, it was still a 5-second operation. And then lastly, we call a full GC collect and compact the large object heap first just to save the effort of putting so much memory to the disk. So now we're in Event Viewer. We've set up these sites. We've set them to suspend and terminate. Now we're in Event Viewer waiting for these to suspend. And here is the fun part. So we launch the sites. This is loading as it was last year. The site came from terminate. It's not so bad. From suspend, far quicker. And this is .NET Nuke. This is no small application here. There was no code added to make this slow. This is just a default install of .NET Nuke. So So any of you who use ASP.NET, you should definitely go and change those settings right now. It's this is an incredible feature from our point of view. I just love it. And shift F5. And yeah. Is this not going? I've broken your clicker. Excuse me. Resume slideshow. Here we are. And so Emo is going to talk a bit about continuous innovation in the ecosystem.
Yes, I will try to. So we saw this slide earlier. So basically, this is how we think about .NET. So the thing that we want to focus on right now are the things on the leftmost column, which is the runtime part and the, you know, the libraries part. And so first of all, let's define ecosystem. I said it before. It's basically a fancy word to say libraries. The key thing here is not just our libraries, libraries produced by Microsoft. It also includes libraries that are successfully and widely used and produced by other people. Good examples of this are JSON.NET, for example. And all of these libraries that form this ecosystem of stuff that you can use when you build your applications. And we believe it's very important to really think about the holistic ecosystem, because at the end of the day, you will not just use our products, you will use a bunch of products, and they also have to, you know, fit nicely together. And a good example there is ASP.NET decided, you know, pretty late, but at least they decided to not use their own serialization technology and instead use JSON.NET like everybody else. And so if you use MVC, you will use JSON.NET. And so for us, it's very important to think about this whole thing together. So the key things that we really wanted to improve is, first of all, the sharing part. And so right now we have multiple experiences, and you know, the other keynote already hinted at all the different platforms that we will support moving forward. And so the key thing is you want to, you know, leverage your own investments in your own code and share your code across your different types of apps. Let's say desktop apps and server apps, for example. The other thing is we really want to make it easier for us, for ourselves, foremost, to produce bits in a faster way and give the, and you know, give you features quicker and be able to react to feedback as well. Quick question, how many of you have reacted to .NET betas and were surprised that the time window was pretty much like 2 days for feedback? Probably everybody. So the problem that we have is when we ship the betas of the full framework is we have to ship the whole framework. And so we do it very lately to stabilize the product. So when we ship betas, they're already pretty usable. But the flip side is we cannot change the product much anymore. So that means most of the things we cannot address basically have to come back to you and say, that's an excellent idea, we will do it next time we ship a product. Which basically means you have to wait for 3 years to see your reality, to your idea become reality. So first of all, let's talk about sharing code. How many of you write apps that are not just in one experience, let's say desktop and websites, or let's say Silverlight apps and, you know, modern apps like .NET apps? How many of you do that? Yeah, quite some people. So did it ever feel a bit like this? So it's this whole problem, right? If you have a library that was targeting Silverlight and the library worked awesomely and you now want to use it in regular ASP.NET or let's say in a Windows Store app, it kind of feels like, you know, having a square peg trying to fit in a round hole because it's a different .NET platform, right? So what so to give you a very concrete example of what I mean by that is, this is a very popular open source library that does model view view model. And so what that means is that you can basically encapsulate your UI in a, you know, in a .NET object model and then just data bind your UI. And so this library makes it a lot easier for you to do that, and the library is called MVVM Lite. So MVVM Lite is available to a variety of .NET platforms, including Silverlight, Windows Store, Windows Phone, and desktop with WPF. And now in order to support that library and to give you a single library to use, the author of this library has that number of projects. And as you can imagine, like, this becomes really painful if the guy now wants to add a feature because he now has to add it to like all the projects. Now, granted, the source itself is not duplicated because you can use linked files in Visual Studio. But linked files are pretty painful. You know, Visual Studio doesn't really understand linked files very well. And basically what it means is you write your code, you have to compile, you know, all the projects to find out whether the APIs you just called are actually available everywhere. And if they aren't, well, then you start writing ifdefs and try to accommodate this thing. And so what that means is basically there is a bunch of examples of where we shipped ourselves technologies and we didn't ship them for all platforms. So a good example is we invested a lot in .NET 4.5 to build a new HTTP client. And we added it to 2.NET 4.5, and you know, the world was a better place. Unfortunately, if you still are targeting legacy, and to put things in perspective, if we say legacy at Microsoft, we mean the thing from yesterday, right? It's not like 10 years old. It's typically everything that's not the thing you're working on right now is considered legacy. And that's not the reality, right? You still have to, you know, support .NET 2 apps probably right now. And so people that target Windows Phone 8, which was unfortunately not even legacy, was shipped at the same time as .NET 4.5, but we didn't have the time to build HTTP client for Windows Phone as well. So people basically said, you know, give us HTTP client. Other examples is async, right? We did this whole async feature for .NET 4.5. It's awesome, but if you still have to target .NET 4.0, well, you can't use async. And then there's even new features that people ask for. And now we have to think about how we do the new features for all the platforms that are out there at the same time. And so, as you notice, these are all, you know, items from Visual Studio User Voice, which, by the way, is really awesome to ask for features, because we're not pressured to actually close them. Connect bugs, we typically close very, very quickly. These ones can actually stay open for a while. We can collect votes and see what's actually popular. But the key thing I want to basically say is, like, this is basically the one thing that frames all of them together. So someone basically said on User Voice, "Dear Microsoft, you published this awesome vision of one Microsoft spanning all your experiences. Now give us one .NET that actually allows us to target all these experiences from one development experience." And basically, that is kind of what we want to do. So in the .NET 4.5 timeframe, we basically, you know, we ship the .NET framework as usual, like this big thing, you know, readers that you can install, also ships with Windows. But we also had two components. Note to self, don't change the slide master right before you do the presentation, because then the colors are all off. But basically, we ship two components, system composition, which is the new version of Math, and TPL data flow as well. Now, the key thing for these two components, they're fully supported, they're part of the .NET framework, you know, they're exactly the same as far as we are concerned. The only difference is they're not shipped with the readers. Instead, they're only shipping on NuGet. So if you want to use them, you know, you add them to your app, and that's it. And since .NET 4.5 shipped, we added even more features. So we already talked about HTTP client. So we shipped the NuGet package that includes HTTP client and gives you HTTP client for pretty much all the current platforms that we have, including Silverlight, Windows Phone 8. It includes .NET Framework 4.0 even. And same as with async, same as with immutable collections. We really try to build new features, you know, in a cross-platform, I should say cross-Microsoft platform, usually. But, you know, first Microsoft platforms. But and there's even more. Like, there's a bunch of, like, 60 packages, 60-plus packages right now on NuGet that are all more or less considered Microsoft .NET Framework packages. And since 60 packages is actually a lot, the question is, how do I find them?
Mint Visual Studio.
That was close, but not quite.
There you go.
So if you have installed, is that your right click? Yes, it is the right click. So if you installed NuGet before, or if you installed Dev 12, which is Visual Studio 2012, 2013 actually, we basically have a new NuGet feed. And so if you ever used NuGet before, NuGet basically has a website called NuGet.org, where there are all the packages. There are about 20,000 packages out there. And the key thing is they're not all from Microsoft. They're from basically from everybody. Everybody can build a NuGet package and upload it there. But we also added a new feed in 2013 that is named Microsoft and .NET. And the difference with that feed is it is a lot smaller. You can see there's only, like, what, 6 pages? And that's pretty much it, 7 pages. So it has about 60 components in them. And most of them are actually having the same branding, or all of them have the same branding yet. But they're all Microsoft packages, Microsoft-supported packages. And the thing I want to highlight here is, if you actually, we have also a website with that, if you scroll the website all the way down, you also find some things that are not Microsoft, like jQuery, for example. And the reason for that is, as I mentioned earlier, we tried not to reinvent the wheel. So if there is a really industry-scale established technology like JSON.NET or jQuery, we don't do it ourselves again, we just use it. And part of using also means we take a dependency on it. So if you take a dependency on us, you transitively take a dependency on jQuery. So if we want to offer support, well, we have to offer the support for these things as well. And that's exactly what we did. So if you install MVC, and MVC brings jQuery, and you call product support and you have an issue with jQuery, they can help you. And in order to make that easier for you, we did this this NuGet feed, which is effectively just a glorified feed where we add things that we support. So if you are in doubt whether you can use a component because you have a policy that says I can only use Microsoft-supported products, well, you just go to microsoft.net and you can select the components there. And then you have the confidence that they're actually supported by us. All right.
All right. Except you, looks like it's a window, not an actual display.
Well, that's your view from your hotel, right? Yeah.
Better? Better? All right. So Imo talked a little bit about the continuous innovation that we're doing in the ecosystem. I think it's fantastic that we are actually offering support for the third-party libraries, that you have this curated feed so you know what normally would have been in the .NET package, and it doesn't have to be delivered in box anymore. It can be delivered in a more agile, nimble way than it was in the past. I'm going to talk a bit about continued innovation in the runtime. I mentioned some of the things with the GC improvements, but today I'm going to focus a little bit on our code generation. So there's two places that we're going with the runtime itself. One is simplified deployment and servicing, and this is across our devices and our clouds. We have basically, Windows, Windows Phone, Xbox, and traditional desktop. There's many places where we deliver .NET right now, and we want to make .NET a lighter weight install than it has been previously. Simpler to service, get rid of things like cascading engine, where if we change MS CoreLib, then suddenly everything down the stack has to be recompiled. There's been a lot of baggage that comes with .NET that we're trying to streamline in the future. So don't install the entire runtime where you don't need it, and stop doing work at install time. Stop requiring the developer to put NGen custom actions into their MSIs. The second thing that we're doing that I'll talk a little bit about today is faster code execution. So for devices, this means don't generate code on the device when you don't need it. The Windows Phone, for example, you have a very small device, it's got a battery, it's sitting in your pocket. The last thing you want is to be compiling code on it. My leg has a couple of burns from back when I had other devices, and the phone's heated up and it was bad. And then we're making fundamental investments in the core technologies, like big changes in the JIT, the garbage collector, the type loader. These changes aren't things that you hear about frequently because these are such core components that they're not very user visible. But when we make changes, they are big. So let's talk a little bit about the execution, code execution, how we've made that faster on devices. So if you ship native code on Windows 8, this applies to all, if you ship code on Windows 8, this applies to all store apps and also to any desktop apps where you have installed your assemblies into the GAC. When the apps are first run, they're actually jitted by the .NET compiler the first few times that they are launched. So how this works is the user downloads the app from the store. This is an MSIL package. When the user executes the app, the JIT compiler compiles the app just like normal, app runs, everything is great. Windows records that the app has been run. Then later, there's a maintenance task that runs. This is the thing that runs at 3 in the morning or whenever you have it configured for your device. Windows runs something that we call automatic NGen to create native images for that app, such that the next time the user runs the app, they'll be launching from native code and the experience will be much better. Now, this seemed like a great idea in Windows 8, and it was because we were reusing the NGen that has been the story for .NET native code performance since the dawn of time. And we figured that the common case is that when you run an app, you're going to be running it repeatedly. And Windows also did a lot of the heavy lifting for us. They launched NGen for us. They took care of curating the apps. If you don't run an app for quite a long while, then Windows recollects the native assemblies, for example, to save disk space on your device. Apparently, Surface RTs come with very little disk space sometimes. So that was the solution that we implemented for Windows, and it worked great. But moving to native code for devices saves battery life. It saves user time, and having Windows do the code generation for you saves the developer any custom install actions. On Windows Phone, we did something a little bit different. We did Windows Phone a little bit after we did Windows 8, and so by then we were able to look at what we had done in Windows 8 and see what the experience was and where we might want to improve. One of the things that we ran into with Windows 8 was you're still generating code on the device. Now, that's not so bad because most Windows 8 machines are plugged in most of the time, but on a phone, as I said, that can be tragic. You know, your phone battery is only 4 or 5 amp hours if you've got a good phone. Mine is 7.8, but I won't brag. And you also don't want a phone in your pocket compiling code. So we did something called Triton, that was the code name. This was the compiler in the cloud. And the nice thing about Triton is you as a developer just write MSIL as you always have. You upload this to the Windows Phone store. We then convert the MSIL into a new intermediate language called MDIL. And MDIL, it's a brilliant concept because it was invented by a guy who lives in Germany, if any of you know Peter Solich's name. MDIL stands for Machine Dependent Intermediate Language. Now, the key difference between MDIL and MSIL is that MSIL is meant to work on an abstract stack machine. There's no representation of the actual computer hardware in the byte stream when you have an MSIL app. But the machine-dependent intermediate language, it's pretty much just native code, except that we've removed any of the hard references to places in the runtime. So you upload your app to the Windows Phone Store. The Windows Phone Store compiles your app into MDIL. The user downloads the app onto her phone as an MDIL app, mostly ARM code, some references to object layouts and types in the .NET framework. On her phone, when the app is installed, we quickly bind the MDIL to become real ARM assembly code. And this step, our goal for this, although I don't know the actual measurements at the end, our goal for this was to work as fast as the disk read-write speed. So it's similar to the speed of the C preprocessor. It's really just reading a stream in and writing the stream out modified. So this is a way that we've enabled you to have an NGen experience, the launch from native experience on your Windows Phone device, without any real work from the developer and without a large impact on the user. The beautiful thing about MDIL, the reason that we don't go completely to native code, is that when Emo decides to change the libraries, as he does every Tuesday, we don't actually have to recompile the app. We just have to find out what the function offsets are in the new library binaries, if any types have changed their layouts, and then we fix up those tokens in the MDIL during the bind step. So the Windows 8 work and the Windows Phone work are an example of how for devices, the .NET team is trying to move towards a seamless native code experience that doesn't contain the cost of running NGen yourself, doesn't contain the cost of re-NGenning, simplifies the application install, because all of this is taken care of for the platform, and still gives you a launch from native code experience. Now, we are doing more work in this, we are doing more work with native code right now. I won't talk about it. I was only given permission to let you know that this is the direction we are going, and pay attention to the VS launch events coming up soon, and all the events up through build of next year. So that's what we're doing for devices, but as you know, Microsoft is now a devices and services company. And devices are a cultivated garden where you have a limited set of APIs that you can call. Whatever the Windows Store says you can do, whatever the Windows Phone Store says you can do, this is what your app can do. But if you're running a server, you basically want to run any code you want. You want no limitations, you want to have dynamic code gen, reflect on everything, emit your code, go crazy. So JIT code generation, or some kind of a dynamic execution model, is still very, very important. And This is something that I personally wrote this new JIT called RyuJIT, as I believe what I said it says on the column on the left.
Top right, actually, but yes.
Top right? Okay, good, yeah. So I've been in Germany for a day, and the only German I've picked up so far was from Dr. Fox. It is, mein Deutsch ist nicht gut. Yeah, is that? Yeah, that's what I've learned. So so we did this thing that we've called RyuJIT. It has a very funny name. It comes from there's a Japanese dragon god. And if any of you are CodeGen people, the classic compiler textbook is the Dragon Book. It's a series of books that the four editions have had dragons. It has a programmer sitting in front of a computer, and the programmer is slaying the dragon with his compiler. And so it's referred to as the Dragon Book in the field. And so Ryujin is this Japanese dragon god. And so when we had our original code name, which I'm not allowed to mention but appears in the demo, when we had our original code name turned out to be very similar to an airline in the United States, as well as very similar to a Windows release code name, we quickly had to pick something different, and being compiler geeks, we picked RyuJIT. So the nice thing about RyuJIT is for years, .NET has had two separate compiler code bases. We started off as a 32-bit platform because x86 was the world, right? You know, .NET was to be running on all computers, and all computers were x86 computers. Everything is good. Then servers came along, and we decided that, okay, we need a server code base. But servers were different than user devices in that servers were more concerned about code quality because you're going to start, than they were startup, because you're going to start your app once, and then you're going to run it forever. Your services are all long-running services. Well, that was the case 10 years ago. Nowadays, servers are more like websites. You go to them, you compile your code, you show your code, you shut that down, you go to Twitter, you shut this down, you go over there, you shut. And so now, servers have become the launch experience is as critical as the code gen experience. So a few years ago, we recognized that it was high time to develop a new JIT for 64-bit, and RyuJIT is what we have. I will demo that now. We will be doing RyuJIT for all architectures. We're starting with 64-bit because that was where we had the most critical need. But it is going to be the .NET JIT for all architectures real soon now. So this is a demo that was written by our CodeGen lead. And its purpose is just to show the difference in startup time between RyuJIT and the existing 64-bit JIT in .NET. This is just rendering a Mandelbrot. So the one on the left is the normal 64-bit JIT. And, you know, it's okay, 1600 seconds, 1500 seconds. The one on the right is something that it says JIT Blue, which I'm not sure what that is, but what that should say is RyuJIT is on. So the JIT Blue, this is generating code in half the time. And the way he's written this app, every time that you start the app, it actually is rejitting all of the code. So this is a representative sample of a heavy code gen application. Now, other instances of where RyuJIT is especially valuable, the key is if you are compiling, there we go. If you are compiling regular expressions, for example, we have a couple of regular expressions that are well-formed that were taking 6 minutes to compile on the existing 64-bit JIT. And it's just seconds on RyuJIT. This is available now as a CTP. You can read the .NET blog to see where to get it. And of course, we welcome your feedback on that. Yes. All right, so wrapping up, we've talked a bit about .NET 4.5.1. We've really tried to keep our focus more on where we're going rather than where we are. But I can certainly tell you that .NET is not dead, and you can expect big things to come from us in the future. In developer productivity, we have a number of diagnostics improvements that you can see in some talks later. The ASP.NET app suspension, that really is one, I think one of the killer features of .NET 4.5.1. And In the continuous innovation, the fact that we're able to be more nimble in delivering libraries while still providing the service and support that Microsoft has expected, and of course, making fundamental changes in the runtime, so to keep .NET to be the choice of developers going forward. One thing you may have noticed from both my and Emo's talk is how much we pulled from developer feedback. We really do love hearing from you. We don't know what to do unless you're telling us to do it. Well, not quite true, but here are many ways to contact us. We definitely want to know what's important to you. So
there's one thing I want to mention, that is we have user voice, which is effectively voting for features.
Yes.
The critical thing for voting for features is getting enough people to know about your idea in the first place. So one offer that we have is if you file a user voice item, send a tweet to @.NET, and you will retweet your user voice item so that we can make sure that everybody that is subscribing to that can know about the feature and can actually vote for that feature. So just to give you an idea what that means, the week before, we had a feature request for releasing our out-of-band NuGet packages with a non-Windows license. And someone filed the user voice item, forwarded it to @.NET, and within one day we received about 3,500 votes on that. And that's typically one of the, a few thousand votes is really good for a user voice item. And so once things bubble up that much, you can be assured that management will look into those. And it also helps us a lot, because if I go to my management and ask for a feature, it's always more helpful if I can point out, 3,000 developers want this feature. So really make use of that.
Speaking as management, I can agree. If Emo comes and says, users want it, then yes, we will fund. All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
So, ganz kurz, wir haben jetzt dann 30 Minuten Pause, Kaffeepause, jeder hat sich's verdient, glaube ich. Am besten den Raum in die eine oder andere Richtung verlassen, weil wir werden dann jetzt hier diese Wand einziehen für die nächsten Sessions entsprechend, okay? Dankeschön und lasst euch den Kaffee schmecken.